You know the feeling intimately, right? You're sitting at a heavy wooden desk. The room is completely quiet. And sitting squarely in front of you is this completely blank, just freshly bound notebook.
The worst kind of notebook.
Exactly. I mean, the spine hasn't even been cracked yet. You've got a pen in your hand. You've deliberately carved out this time. Like, you have the intention to start.
But then it hits you.
Yeah, you stare down at that vast expanse of stark white paper, and your mind just goes violently, almost aggressively blank.
It's terrifying.
It really is. The sheer unadulterated emptiness of the page isn't just quiet, it's deafening.
Right, because it demands something from you.
Yes, exactly. It demands everything but offers absolutely nothing in return.
It's the tyranny of infinite possibility, really.
The tyranny of infinite possibility. I like that.
Well, I mean, a blank page provides zero structural scaffolding, right?
Yeah.
It strips away all environmental cues and basically forces the human brain to generate something out of a total vacuum.
Which our brains hate.
Oh, they despise it. Biologically, our brains are just pattern recognition machines. We're constantly scanning our environment for edges, for contrast, for established frameworks to latch onto.
So we can react to them.
Exactly, to react against.
Yeah.
So when you remove all of those external inputs, the cognitive load of initiating action just becomes astronomical.
It's exhausting before you even write a word.
Right. The blank page is essentially a mirror reflecting your own internal chaos and uncertainty directly back into your prefrontal cortex.
Which is a heavy way to start, I know, but I bring up this visceral image of the blank page to launch our deep dive today because, well, the situation we find ourselves in is entirely unprecedented for this show.
It really is. I was genuinely confused when I first saw it.
Same. I mean, usually we take a monumental stack of complex source material, peer-reviewed research, economic white papers, heavy historical
The
treatises.
really dense stuff.
Right. And we metabolize that density into the most crucial insights for you, the listener. We do the heavy lifting of synthesis.
That's the whole point of a deep dive.
But the source material we were provided for today's deep dive, it completely breaks that contract.
It shatters it.
We were handed a document that contains absolutely nothing but a 10-word title.
Just a title, nothing else.
Literally no text. There are no chapters, no data tables mapping out compound interest, no glossaries of arcane financial jargon.
No bulleted lists of market strategies, just white space.
Right. We have a completely blank slate, save for these 10 words hovering at the top margin, which read, and I quote, "Excerpts from the Beginner's Guide to Investing."
And that's it.
That's it. My immediate instinct was just to scrap the session.
Well, yeah, the initial reaction to receiving a source document like that is to assume it's a clerical error.
Oh, absolutely. I
Yeah.
thought, where's the rest of the PDF?
It feels like an incomplete transmission. You start looking for the missing attachment or assuming it's a corrupted file.
But the longer I stared at that terrifyingly blank page under that very specific heading, the more I realized this wasn't a clerical error.
It's really not.
It's an unintentional masterpiece. I mean, staring at this empty guide is the purest, most accurate distillation of what it actually feels like to stand at the threshold of the financial markets.
It's incredibly profound when you actually sit with it.
Right. It is the ultimate metaphor for your journey if you're listening to this and you're just starting out. So we are going to lean into this void today.
Because those 10 words, suspended above that abyss of white space, they're heavily loaded with profound cognitive and psychological prerequisites.
Exactly. They outline the exact mental posture required to step into a volatile, high-stakes arena.
And honestly, the framing of a discipline often dictates the success of the practitioner long before any technical skills are ever acquired.
I mean, we don't need the mechanical steps of portfolio diversification to deconstruct the monumental psychological leap required to merely open a book with this specific title.
Language is never neutral. The author, whoever they hypothetically are, chose these 10 words to act as a psychological filter.
Right. So by isolating these words, we can basically reverse engineer the mental architecture of a successful market participant.
Which is fascinating. Where do we start?
Let's dissect that architecture. Starting with the very specific demographic this non-existent text targets, it explicitly calls out the beginner.
Yes, the beginner.
It is not an intermediate manual. It is not an advanced treatise for institutional traders.
No, it's very specific.
The title demands that the reader self-identify as a complete novice before they even turn to the first, albeit blank, page.
And that requirement to self-identify as a beginner is an aggressive confrontation with the adult ego.
Oh, for sure. Nobody likes admitting they don't know something.
Exactly. Let's look at the developmental trajectory of competence, right? As children, we exist in this perpetual state of being beginners.
It's our default mode.
Right. We are expected to stumble, to ask rudimentary questions, to fall off the bicycle. Society grants us massive leniency.
Because you're a kid. You're not supposed to know how the world works.
But as we transition into adulthood, that social contract shifts dramatically. We spend decades constructing this facade of performative competence.
Performative competence, that's a great term.
Right. We are expected to have a coherent career trajectory, to understand our tax liabilities, and to just seamlessly manage the allocation of our capital.
Even if we have absolutely no clue what we're doing.
Exactly. So to actively claim the title of beginner in adulthood, especially in a domain tied to survival and status, like finance, it's a severe social demotion.
It's agonizing. It requires this massive act of vulnerability.
It really does.
It's basically a public confession of vulnerability. You are essentially standing in a crowded room and declaring, hey, I have a fatal blind spot in my ability to sustain myself.
And human nature means we will do almost anything to avoid that friction.
Absolutely anything. I mean, look at the tools we use. We use apps that automatically round up our purchases and invest the spare change precisely so we don't have to face the friction of learning how a brokerage account actually works.
Yes, the set it and forget it mentality.
Right. Or like we buy algorithmic meal replacement shakes so we don't have to endure the beginner's friction of learning to chop vegetables and balance flavor profiles.
We constantly outsource our incompetence to technology just to preserve our self-image.
And preserving that self-image traps us in a state of terminal ignorance.
It does. Psychologically, though, once you survive the ego blow of accepting the label, being a beginner becomes a profound cognitive advantage.
Okay, unpack that. How is it an advantage?
Well, when you step into a room demanding to be treated as an expert, you immediately lock yourself out of foundational inquiry.
Because you can't ask the basic questions without exposing yourself.
Precisely. You cannot ask someone to explain the fundamental mechanism of a municipal bond if you are projecting the aura of a seasoned trader.
You just have to nod and pretend you get it.
Right. The ego forces you into a defensive posture where you are constantly covering your tracks, nodding along to concepts you don't grasp at all.
So the beginner avoids all that.
Yes. The beginner, having already surrendered their status, operates in a zone of complete psychological safety. They are totally unburdened by the need to perform.
I understand the psychological relief of taking off that mask of competence, but let me challenge this from a purely pragmatic standpoint.
Okay, let's hear it.
Especially in the context of global financial markets, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is being a beginner actually an advantage, or is it just a romanticized liability?
Interesting. Why would it be a liability?
Because when you step into the financial markets, you aren't in a safe, insulated classroom with a supportive teacher.
No, definitely not.
You are stepping into an arena populated by algorithmic high-frequency trading supercomputers, institutional hedge funds with centuries of proprietary data.
And seasoned professionals.
Exactly. Seasoned professionals whose entire survival depends on extracting liquidity from the less informed.
That is the reality of the market, yes.
So as a beginner, you lack heuristics. You don't have the mental shortcuts to recognize a value trap or a dead cat bounce.
You're starting from zero.
Right. You are an uncalibrated instrument in an environment that heavily penalizes miscalibration. Doesn't the beginner's mind just make you raw meat for the sharks?
Well, the vulnerability you are describing is very real. But I think you are conflating a lack of technical heuristics with a lack of adaptive capacity.
Okay, explain the difference.
Heuristics, those mental shortcuts forged through years of experience, they are incredibly efficient in stable, predictable environments.
Right, like driving a car to work.
Yes. The basal ganglia automates these patterns so we don't have to expend prefrontal cortex energy analyzing every single market tick or every stoplight in your car analogy.
Which makes us faster.
Faster, yes. However, financial markets are not stable environments.
Understatement of the year.
Right. They are complex, nonlinear, adaptive ecosystems subject to sudden, violent paradigm shifts.
So when the rules change.
When a paradigm shift occurs, a black swan event, a global pandemic, a sovereign debt crisis, those highly calibrated heuristics become absolutely lethal.
Because the instrument is perfectly tuned to a frequency that just no longer exists.
Precisely. This is the phenomenon of functional fixedness, or what some call the curse of knowledge.
I've heard of that.
The expert is so deeply entrenched in their established models that they literally cannot perceive data that contradicts their framework.
So they ignore the warning signs.
Completely.
Hmm.
Look at the collapse of long-term capital management in the late 90s, or the spectacular failure of institutional risk models during the 2008 subprime mortgage crisis.
Oh, man. Yeah. Those guys are definitely not beginners.
Far from it. These were Nobel laureates and Wall Street veterans operating with the most sophisticated heuristics on the planet.
And they still drove right off the cliff.
They failed catastrophically because their models told them that certain housing market correlations were literally impossible.
So where does the beginner fit into this?
Well, the beginner, lacking those rigid automated assumptions, possesses a high degree of neuroplasticity.
They aren't locked in.
Right. They look at the raw data. A sudden spike in default rates, for instance, and they ask, why is this happening?
Instead of asking, how do I tweak my existing strategy to ignore this and keep making money?
Exactly. The beginner is uniquely equipped to survive regime changes because they are not married to the old regime.
Okay, wow. So the lack of ingrained habits isn't just an ego shield. It's an actual structural advantage when the rules of the game change overnight.
It's a massive advantage.
The blank page forces you into that state of cognitive flexibility. You can't rely on the shortcuts because there are no shortcuts printed on the page.
You're forced to look at what's actually there.
Right. But acknowledging that you are an uncalibrated instrument capable of adapting is really only the initial phase.
Sure.
I mean, you can sit in a state of vulnerable neuroplasticity forever and never actually execute a trade or build wealth.
True. Eventually, you have to do something.
You eventually need a framework to channel that flexibility. Which brings us to the nature of the framework promised by the title. The text explicitly calls itself a guide.
And the linguistic distinction here is paramount. The author could have chosen any number of nouns to describe the container for this knowledge.
They had infinite options.
Right. They did not title this The Beginner's Rulebook to Investing, nor The Beginner's Algorithm, nor The Beginner's Instruction Manual.
It's specifically a guide.
Yes. The choice of the word guide communicates a very specific philosophy about the environment the reader is about to enter and the nature of the relationship they must form with the material.
Let's draw a hard line between those concepts because I think it's crucial.
Okay, let's break it down.
An instruction manual is designed for deterministic environments. Like, when I buy a piece of flat-pack furniture, the manufacturer provides an instruction manual because the system is completely closed.
There are no surprises in an IKEA box, usually.
Exactly. There are exactly 42 screws, 6 panels of composite wood, and 1 Allen wrench. If I execute the sequence of operations outlined in the manual with zero deviation, I will assemble a structurally sound bookshelf every single time.
Is a completely static, predictable reality.
Right. A rulebook operates on similar logic, defining rigid boundaries within a tightly controlled zero-sum game, like chess or tennis.
But a guide implies an entirely different ontology. A guide exists for open, probabilistic environments.
It's the difference between driving a train and navigating the open ocean.
Oh, I like that. Expand on that.
If you are driving a locomotive, you have a set of operational rules, and you literally just follow the physical tracks laid out in front of you.
The path is already decided.
Right. The environment, the track was engineered to support your journey. But if you are navigating a ship across the Pacific Ocean...
The ocean does not care about you.
At all. It doesn't care about your schedule, your cargo, or your survival. It is vast, indifferent, and subject to chaotic weather systems.
You definitely cannot use an instruction manual to cross the Pacific.
You use a guide historically. You'd use the principles of celestial navigation. The stars give you a framework to determine your position. You still have to constantly adjust your sails, read the barometric pressure, and adapt to the immediate shifting realities of the water.
That captures the essence of a complex adaptive system perfectly. Financial markets are the ocean in that analogy.
Completely indifferent to whether we make money or lose it all.
Exactly. They are vast, interconnected ecosystems driven by the aggregate psychology of billions of humans, sudden geopolitical conflicts, technological breakthroughs, and macroeconomic policy shifts.
So an instruction manual is useless there.
Worse than useless, it's dangerous. A rigid instruction manual for investing something that says, always buy this specific asset class when the interest rate hits exactly 4%, is inherently fragile.
Because it assumes the environment won't change.
Right. It will shatter the moment the underlying market dynamics evolve.
Huh.
A guide, on the other hand, provides the navigational principles.
It teaches you how to sail.
Yes. It teaches you how to interpret the barometric pressure of inflation, how to calculate the wind resistance of market volatility, and how to calibrate your own risk tolerance.
So it provides the framework for decision-making, not the decisions themselves.
Exactly.
The guide holds the sextant, but you are the one who has to steer the ship through the storm.
That's a great way to put it.
And you know, there is an implicit emotional tone in the word guide that we shouldn't overlook either.
What do you mean?
Well, a textbook or an instruction manual is kind of sterile. It dictates from a position of detached authority.
It talks at you.
Right. But a guide implies a companion. Think of a Sherpa on Mount Everest. It suggests an empathetic presence, someone who understands the psychological terror of navigating the unknown and is actually walking alongside you.
That's vital. In an environment as intimidating as finance, that implicit trust is the required catalyst for action.
Because without it, you'd just freeze.
Trust is the bridge between analysis and execution. Without a trusted framework, the beginner remains totally paralyzed by the blank page.
Just staring at it forever.
Right. The guide reduces the cognitive overload to a manageable level, allowing the beginner to finally take the step of allocating capital.
Which logically brings us to the destination of this entire navigational exercise.
The core action.
Yes. The framework, the vulnerability, the neuroplasticity, they are all mobilized in service of the final heavily weighted concept in our source material.
Investing.
Investing. And this is where the sheer emptiness of our source document forces us to do the hardest analytical work.
Because there's no actual content to analyze.
Right. Because we don't have the text, we are completely blocked from getting distracted by the tactical minutia.
Which is what everyone usually focuses on.
Exactly. We cannot waste this deep dive debating the tax efficiency of a Roth IRA, or the expense ratios of broad market index funds, or the liquidity of real estate syndications.
We can't see the trees, so we have to look at the forest.
We have to strip the concept of investing down to its absolute bare metal. What is it, really?
Well, stripped of all Wall Street nomenclature, investing is fundamentally the act of allocating current resources with the calculated expectation of capturing a future benefit.
That's it. That's the core definition.
That's it. It is the deferral of immediate consumption.
Which sounds simple, but it's really not.
It's incredibly difficult. When we examine that definition through an evolutionary and neurological lens, we uncover a staggering psychological anomaly.
An anomaly.
Yes. The act of investing represents a radical rebellion against the core survival programming of the human species.
Okay, this is fascinating. Which brings in the concept of time preference, right? Our lizard brains are biologically hardwired to radically discount the future.
Yes, exactly. Temporal discounting. For hundreds of thousands of years, humans operated in immediate return environments as hunter-gatherers.
The rules were simple.
Very simple.
Yeah.
The cognitive mandate was incredibly clear. Locate calories, consume calories immediately.
If you stumbled upon a cache of high-caloric fruit, you didn't leave it there to compound over the fiscal quarter.
No. If you delayed consumption, the fruit would rot, a competing tribe would steal it, or a predator would eliminate you before you could even return.
So planning for tomorrow was literally a bad idea.
It was a terrible idea. High time preference, prioritizing the now over the later, was not a character flaw back then. It was the optimal survival strategy.
We didn't even have a concept of the distant future because the immediate present was just so lethal.
Right. You just had to survive until sunset.
The leap from that mindset to the concept of investing requires a massive, almost traumatic rewiring of how we perceive time.
It's a huge cognitive leap.
I always think about this transition through the lens of agriculture.
The shift from foraging to farming.
Yes, the original invention of investing. Imagine the sheer psychological terror of the very first humans who figured out seed germination.
It must have seemed like madness.
Total madness. You have a handful of perfectly edible seeds. Your stomach is currently empty. Your evolutionary programming is screaming at you to chew and swallow the seeds right now just to survive the day.
But instead...
Instead, you walk out to a field, dig a hole, and throw your food into the dirt.
You're literally burying your dinner.
You are literally throwing away your immediate survival on the abstract, hallucinatory promise that months from now, the dirt will give you back a larger yield.
That is the perfect distillation of the psychological friction involved in investing.
It's so unnatural.
It is. You are suffering a concrete, localized pain in the present for a theoretical, dispersed benefit in the future.
And modern neuroscience has mapped exactly why that friction is so difficult to overcome, right?
Oh, the neuroscience on this is incredible. functional magnetic resonance imaging fMRI studies, particularly the work exploring how we conceptualize our future selves, have revealed a startling neurological disconnect.
What happens in the brain?
Well, when researchers ask subjects to think about themselves in the present moment, the cortical midline structures of the brain, those are the areas associated with self-representation, they light up brilliantly.
The brain goes, yep, that's me.
Exactly. But when they ask those same subjects to think about themselves 10, 20, or 30 years in the future, the neural activation pattern changes entirely.
Because the brain stops recognizing the future self as me.
Exactly that. The neural signature for thinking about your retirement age self looks almost identical to the neural signature of thinking about a complete stranger.
Wait, really? Like a literal stranger?
Yes. Like a random person you pass on the street.
That is wild.
From a neurological standpoint, asking you to take a portion of your current paycheck and put it into a retirement account feels identical to asking you to walk out your front door and hand your hard-earned money to a total stranger.
No wonder it's so hard to save for retirement.
The brain actively resists the transfer of resources because it simply doesn't recognize the recipient as itself.
Okay, so that reframes the entire concept of financial discipline for me.
It really does take the moral judgment out of it, doesn't it?
Completely. We moralize saving money as a sign of good character, but it's actually an act of supreme cognitive dissonance.
You're fighting your own biology.
Right. It isn't just about delayed gratification. It's an act of profound empathy for a stranger who just happens to inhabit your body 30 years from now.
I love that framing. Profound empathy for your future self.
But let's take it a step further. Beyond just the psychology and look at the physics of it. Because investing isn't just about money, it's about thermodynamics.
Thermodynamics. Okay, elaborate on the thermodynamic angle.
Well, it is fundamentally a fight against entropy. Everything in the universe trends toward disorder and decay.
The second law of thermodynamics.
Exactly. And wealth is no different. If you hoard resources, whether that's grain in a silo or fiat currency under a mattress, entropy attacks it.
Right. The grain gets eaten by rats or rots from moisture.
And the fiat currency gets eaten by inflation and loses its purchasing power.
It decays.
Exactly. By simply holding on to resources, you are losing them to the natural degradation of the system.
So inaction is a guaranteed loss.
Yes. Investing is the mechanism by which we capture kinetic energy, our daily labor, our time, our immediate effort, and convert it into potential energy, which is capital.
Okay, I follow.
We then deploy that potential energy into productive assets, companies, real estate, innovations that grow faster than the rate of entropy. We are actively trying to project our energy into the future before the universe degrades it.
Wow. That framing completely alters the weight of the Planck document in front of us.
It makes it feel a lot heavier, doesn't it?
It does. To seek out a beginner's guide to investing is to actively engage in that fight against entropy.
It's declaring war on decay.
Yes. It signifies that the reader has reached a developmental milestone where they are willing to conquer their evolutionary programming, bridge the neural gap to their future self, and systematically build a fortress against economic decay.
And I want to connect this directly back to you sitting there right now listening to this deep dive.
Because it applies right here, right now.
Exactly. Because capital is just one form of kinetic energy. The most potent, unrenewable resource you possess is your time and your attention.
You can never get it back.
Never. By choosing to press play on this deep dive, by allocating the specific block of your day to sit with us and engage your mind with these dense foundational concepts, you are engaging in the purest form of cognitive investing.
You're doing the thing we're talking about.
You really are. You could be passively consuming entertainment, letting your attention dissipate into the entropy of an algorithmic social media feed.
Scrolling endlessly.
Right. But instead, you are planting seeds in the dirt. You are suffering the friction of deep focus in the present with the calculated expectation that this synthesis will yield intellectual dividends.
Better decision-making frameworks.
Exactly. And a more robust understanding of the world tomorrow. You are already executing the exact mechanism that this blank guide requires.
The act of directed learning is essentially the compounding interest of the mind.
I love that. The compounding interest of the mind.
And the fact that you are executing this synthesis alongside us brings us to the final and perhaps the most complex layer of our source material.
There's one more clue on the page.
Yes. We have analyzed the vulnerable beginner, the adaptive guide, and the temporal rebellion of investing. But all of this is contextualized by the very first two words on the page.
The words that completely destabilize the narrative.
Exactly.
Excerpts from.
Yes. The document does not claim to be the guide itself. It explicitly states that it contains excerpts from the Beginner's Guide to Investing.
Which is just brilliant. We are not just analyzing a blank page. We are analyzing a blank page that announces it is only a fragment of a larger missing whole.
It's self-aware of its own incompleteness.
Right. And to understand the gravity of that, we have to look at how information is structured and consumed in the modern era. We exist entirely in an excerpt culture.
We really do. We are subjected to a relentless, overwhelming deluge of data every single second.
It's a fire hose.
And to avoid complete cognitive collapse, we rely on fragmentation.
We have to. We can view this through the lens of information theory, specifically Claude Shannon's work on signal processing.
Oh, Shannon's work is perfect for this.
Right. In a high-noise environment, which perfectly describes the modern digital landscape, extracting the signal, like the truth or the actionable insight, requires immense computational power.
Because there's just so much noise surrounding it.
Exactly. Because we lack the time and energy to process the raw data of a 600-page congressional economic report or a dense philosophical treatise, we outsource the signal extraction.
We rely on algorithmic curation.
We read the 2-paragraph executive summary.
We consume the 280-character hot take summarizing the quarterly earnings call.
We listen to the 15-minute audio condensation of a massive historical biography.
We consume the exhaust of the information, not the fuel.
That's a brutal way to say it, but it's true. We consume the exhaust. And there is a massive hidden cost to outsourcing that extraction.
What's the cost?
When you consume information exclusively through excerpts, you surrender your critical faculties to the curator.
Oh, absolutely.
You are blindly trusting that the algorithm or the influencer or the editor accurately identified the signal and didn't just highlight the noise that generated the most engagement.
Which, let's be honest, is usually what they highlight.
Because outrage drives clicks.
Furthermore, excerpts force a very specific cognitive burden onto the reader. When you are handed fragments, your brain automatically attempts to stitch them together into a coherent narrative.
It's that pattern recognition again.
Right. We see this in Gestalt psychology, the principle of closure.
Principle of closure, right.
If you draw a circle but leave a small gap in the line, the human eye will instinctively bridge that gap and perceive a complete circle anyway.
We can't help ourselves.
We can't. And we do the exact same thing with fragmented information. We take an excerpt about rising inflation, an excerpt about a tech company's supply chain issues, and an excerpt from a geopolitical news alert.
And boom, our brain forcefully connects the dots to create a complete macroeconomic narrative.
Even if those dots aren't actually connected in reality.
And this is exactly how catastrophic financial bubbles and panics are born.
Oh, definitely.
Think about the meme stock phenomenon a few years ago.
The ultimate excerpt-driven event.
Exactly. You had millions of retail investors operating almost entirely on excerpts. They saw a disconnected screenshot of a massive portfolio gain on a forum.
Then they saw a highly out-of-context excerpt of a short interest report.
Then they saw a cryptic emoji tweeted by a CEO.
And their brains applied the principle of closure.
Right. They stitched those completely disconnected excerpts together into a narrative of guaranteed infinite returns.
And they deployed their capital based on a hallucination.
A total hallucination. The danger of the excerpt is that the gaps you fill in with your own assumptions are usually fundamentally flawed.
So the vulnerability of the beginner is compounded exponentially when their only map is an incomplete collection of torn pages.
It's a recipe for disaster.
However, there is a powerful inversion to this dynamic.
What's the upside?
Well, while passive consumption of excerpts leads to disastrous closure, active engagement with excerpts is the highest form of intellectual synthesis.
Okay, walk me through that.
You cannot be a passive passenger if you only have fragments of the map. You are forced to become the architect of your own understanding.
Because the curator isn't there to spoon-feed you.
Right. You have to actively seek out the connective tissue, cross-reference the data, and build the structural integrity yourself.
Which brings us to the profound irony and the ultimate revelation of this deep dive.
The blank page.
The blank page. The page we are handed today is the ultimate excerpt.
It is an excerpt consisting of zero words.
It provides no data, no noise, and no signal.
By stripping away every single tactical detail, the blank page forces the reader to confront the only thing that actually matters before the first trade is ever placed.
Which is their own internal architecture.
Yes. It strips away the illusion that more information equals better execution.
We constantly use the pursuit of more data as a sophisticated form of procrastination.
Oh, all the time. I just need to research a little more.
Right. We tell ourselves, I cannot start investing my capital or launching this business or learning this language until I read one more book, listen to one more analysis, and perfectly understand all the macroeconomic variables.
It's a trap.
The blank page destroys that excuse completely. It stands as a monument to the fact that the posture of the beginner, the willingness to embrace an adaptive guide over a rigid rule book, and the capacity to conquer your own time preference are infinitely more critical than memorizing a glossary of financial terms.
The internal mechanics must be built before the external mechanics can be applied.
Exactly. The text of the guide will inevitably fill itself in through trial, through error, through actually engaging with the market.
But only if you have the psychological fortitude to stare down the blank page and initiate the action.
Right, the knowledge is not contained within the ink on the page.
No, the knowledge is generated by the friction of the reader engaging with the unknown.
That is beautifully said. Let's bring this all into focus and survey the ground we've covered today, because it's been a journey.
It really has.
We began this session staring down what we thought was a clerical anomaly, a source document containing nothing but a 10-word title suspended in a sea of white space.
But by treating that emptiness not as an error, but as an architectural blueprint, we deconstructed the fundamental psychological framework required to navigate complexity.
Right. We dissected the heavy cultural baggage of the beginner. We recognized that shedding the adult facade of performative competence and embracing the vulnerable neuroplastic state of the uncalibrated instrument is the only way to survive the paradigm shifts of complex systems.
We delineated the critical difference between the static, deterministic nature of a rulebook and the dynamic, empathetic, probabilistic nature of a guide.
And we took a hard look at the evolutionary rebellion required by the act of investing, mapping the neurological disconnect between our present and future selves.
Reframing capital allocation as a thermodynamic war against entropy.
I'm definitely stealing that phrase. And finally, we confronted the modern reality of the excerpt, dissecting how the fragmentation of information in the digital age forces us either into catastrophic hallucinations or into the highest form of active critical synthesis.
It has basically been an exercise in structural subtraction.
Structural subtraction.
By removing the noise of the tactical advice, the blank page amplified the signal of the psychological prerequisites.
And the fact that we were able to extract this density of insight is a testament to the framework we've been discussing. I want to genuinely acknowledge you, the listener, for the active role you played in the synthesis today.
Yes, absolutely.
Because when we revealed that the source material was completely blank, the friction was immediate.
It would have been the easiest thing in the world to disconnect your attention.
Right, to reject the premise entirely and to seek out a different, more traditional source of passive information. To just go find another podcast that gives you 5 quick stock tips.
But your decision to stay engaged with the void, to lean into the abstraction, and to process this conceptual deconstruction alongside us, that demonstrates that you already possess the cognitive flexibility we've been analyzing.
You did not require the deterministic bullet points to extract the underlying value. You applied your own critical faculties to bridge the gaps.
You proved that you are entirely capable of navigating the open ocean without needing a set of train tracks laid out in front of you.
And that capacity to tolerate ambiguity, to sit with the blank page and generate structural understanding from it, that is a superpower.
It will dictate your success far beyond the confines of financial markets.
It is the core engine of intellectual and personal growth. As we close out this deep dive, I want to leave you with a final lingering thought, a prompt to carry with you as you transition back into the noise of your day.
Something to mull over.
Exactly. We spent this time dissecting the terror and the utility of the blank page, and how acknowledging your status as a beginner is the key to unlocking the guide. So look closely at the landscape of your own life right now.
Look past the areas where you project competence and authority.
What is the one complex, intimidating domain you have been avoiding because you simply refuse to suffer the social demotion of being a novice? What is the perfectly crisp, terrifyingly blank page sitting on your desk right now, just waiting for the courage of a beginner to write the first line?
It's waiting for you.
See you next time.